Mining Web Weekly, and Peter Major is in studio back home in Cape Town in a week when Anglo-American are now celebrating. I guess there was always going to be a problem for Anglos, Pete, that they could have thought, well, maybe BHP is going to try and spoil the party for one last time, grab those South American copper assets, put in a knockout bid, knock Teck out the park. Well, it's... that hasn't happened. What was that? What's the story behind the story, given that there was quite a lot of chat about this over the weekend?
There was, Alec, but I always think this kind of chat is probably manufactured by corporate financiers and analysts more than any real company involved in it. You know, it's wishful thinking. They like keeping the suspense. That's how the stock market works, right? Everything's got to be hyped. So I think Billiton, when they walked away, that bid wasn't well put together originally. And, you know, they upped it two more times after the original. And I think I was one of the leading people saying, geez, I would take it. I hope Anglo's shareholders don't. I would take it and hope it failed, you know, and buy back later. But I thought it was a crazy high bid. And I don't think it would have helped BHP share price at all. Although funny enough, they kept falling afterwards and Anglos went up. But I think that's from the work that Gordon Wanblad did. You know, it really put a bigger fire under him, although I thought he was moving quite fast before that bid. But he worked very hard to show there's a lot more value there. And I think it's better for the country and for the world that that bid didn't go through. So I don't think there was much chance of Billiton coming at it again. You know, Anglos is trading even higher than the original high bid.
Pete, you're talking about the mining industry's Hugh Grant. Duncan Wanblad, not Gordon. Has Gordon Waddle. Maybe you're thinking of someone different. Huh?
Did I say Gordon boy? I'm losing my mind. Yes, we all know Duncan. Jeez.
So where does that come from, that the mining industry's Hugh Grant? And we know Hugh Grant's a movie star. Has he got movie star good looks in some people's opinion?
I think he can be confused at first glance by Hugh Grant.
And, okay.
And funny enough, I saw a third Hugh Grant on Saturday at a corporate do I went to, and I'd seen him once before and commented when I first saw him, "You look just like the CEO of Anglo American." And when I saw him again, he works for a good sized corporation. I said, "Man, you look more like Duncan or Hugh Grant than the two of them look like it." So some people have double gangers out there, not just one.
double gangers, indeed. Okay, so Anglo's now on its way, and that deal, good for Anglo-American. But the latest rumors that are going around that, well, it's only a matter of time before they exit South Africa. Isn't that a bit harsh, given that South Africa finally seems to be getting its act together?
You know what, Alec? It's probably like going back to an old girlfriend that you left in not the best terms with and trying to make up decades later. And we are talking decades later. Anglos left this country in 1999, but I think the claws were out for the grinders, the hacksaws. You know, the union and the ANC back in the 80s said what they were going to do to Anglos when they took over. So they were putting the fear of God into everybody related to Anglos, including investors. And so when they had the opportunity to leave the country in 99, they took it. And Harry Oppenheimer actually fought the hardest against it. Said this is a South African company. But Harry was getting along in years. He was in his 90s then. And I give the executives credit. They'd read this pretty well. They'd seen what happened before in Zambia, Uganda, Kenya, Zimbabwe. And so, yeah, Anglos, if there was something really juicy here, they probably would. And we could talk about a juicy gold asset at the end of this program if we have time. How juicy you have to be to get foreign money to come in. But they're in no rush to get rid of Kumba. It is a great asset, and it's easier to control and run than, say, was Anglo-American Platinum. That said, Kumba is terribly dependent on the infrastructure, on the logistics, the railroad, more than Amplats. So I wouldn't be surprised if someday we see they got a good offer for Kumba Iron Ore and they exit that as well.
But on that score, Transnet this week gave us news about its 11 private sector entrance into the public-private partnership. So there is hope there.
There's definitely hope. People are making the right noises, but we too often confuse the right noises and the right platitudes in this country for action. And we all know noises and talk are way at the back of the dictionary, and action and doing are at the front of the dictionary. So until this country can move to the front of the dictionary, and they're going to have to exhibit this on a regular basis over a few years, not just a couple platitudes and a token change. But yes, the noises are positive, and actions usually start with the right noises, good actions. Mm.
Yeah. PGMs, this is the PGM capital of the world, Platinum Group Metals. They've had a good spike recently. Is it sustainable?
I think it is, Alec, because other than Ivan Platts, we're not building platinum mines like we used to. We're not building platinum mines to keep up with world growth, actually. But with this big advent of electric cars a few years ago, it put the fear of God in producers that, wow, maybe the demand is going to change. And I think with Trump coming into America, and he's got a lot of following outside of America now, a lot of other countries are saying, we rush too hard into alternative energy. It's not economically possible and not economically feasible. That means PGMs in automobiles are going to be around longer. And they might even grow a little bit from current levels because electric cars are taking 10, 15, 20% of some of the new car sales in these countries. So I won't say that's the only reason, but that's, in my mind, that's the biggest reason. But these are good prices, all of them across the board. These are good prices for platinum, great prices for rhodium. You know, that's double the long-term rhodium price. 8,000 is double 4,000. Long-term platinum prices and even 1,000, what is it? 1550. And they're as solid as that gold price. They come off a little bit, maybe 3, 4, 5%. They push right back up. So this has been going on for five months now. 5 months means there's a lot of real buying behind it. So it's really good for our platinum producers. Great.
And I guess we've got to look for the messages on the wind, and the COP30 conference in Brazil wasn't exactly a overwhelming vote of confidence for those who are driving the renewables agenda.
No, you're right. Whether Mr. Trump is right or wrong, he's at least caused people to reanalyze these headlong rushes into new energy, getting rid of the internal combustion engine, getting rid of coal. And I'm an environmentalist as much as I'm a mining veteran. But we made a lot of progress. The world's made progress on cleaning up coal-fired power plants. And to just say we're going to abandon coal overnight, just like Germany, they just abandoned nuclear overnight decades ago, and they paid the price of it. You know, Germany's costs are 2 to 3 times their electricity costs what the rest of the world is, right at the top. And it was from abandoning things on ideology rather than on any kind of socioeconomic calculations. So as you pointed out in Brazil, there's a lot of doubts there. And you don't have to throw out the long-term plan, but how do we get there? You know, are we going to get there forcing all these countries to go into a more broke status than most of them already are? And putting more people out of work, you know, without training them and gearing them up towards the alternative energies.
It's not surprising the way you talk that people are so cynical about politicians now, because it's almost like the media promotes a particular line. The politicians pick that up and say, we are going to give you coal-free energy, or as the Germans said, nuclear-free energy. And people don't realize the implications of these slogans until it's too late, and until you see your economy under huge pressure because your energy prices are far higher than elsewhere in the world, and you didn't quite appreciate that the ideology, which I guess everybody can vote for and say, yes, good idea, was going to be that expensive, because then you might have voted a little differently.
Alec, if we could do anything to improve this situation, it starts at home with the families and it starts at school. And I know people who ask questions and who are very astute, and it's because they were taught to question things and to ask, what are the consequences of everything? If a volcano goes off today, what are the consequences? If a politician takes over from another politician, what are the consequences? And bore down further, when they promote these ideologies, when they promote these big ideas, what are the consequences? You know, if our government has learned anything, and I don't think they have, is they don't think through their statements, let alone their policies. You know, it's bad enough just shooting your mouth off. You can get away with making a mistake and saying crazy things. But when you actually implement policy, when Parliament signs off on policies and legislation, and they don't work through the consequences, we've seen the result of that. So, yeah, people have to say, what are the consequences for everything, whether it sounds good or bad? Are the consequences as bad as you pointed out? Are the consequences as good? And it's a good exercise for each individual when he hears or reads something, write down what consequences he thinks there are and put it away somewhere and look at it 6 months later, and he'll get an idea how good he is at calculating consequences. He might find out, wow, I didn't have a clue about that. Or, wow, I was pretty right. You know, I got 5 out of those 6. We do that as analysts and fund managers. We're supposed to. I just wish politicians would.
Yeah, yeah, and voters.
And voters, yeah. Yes.
Peter, you mentioned gold at the beginning of the program. Before we go there, and I'd love to get some insights there, what exactly is the reason for South African gold stocks not reacting to the much higher gold price? Why are they not trading a lot higher than they are, given what the gold price has done?
Alec, we got to compare this to some kind of benchmark. So when you said that, I immediately thought, well, relative to the gold price, all of our gold shares are 2 to 3 times higher this year. So that's not too bad, huh? That means you could have bought any of our gold shares instead of gold, instead of Kruger Rands, you would have made 2 to 3 times your money on them. Now, maybe there's some overseas gold assets that went up more, but I can tell you two big ones that didn't go up nearly that much. One is called Barrick and one is called Newmont. And neither of those are South African. Okay, both of them had a South African near the top. But yeah, why is that? Maybe they weren't geared as much. Maybe they got too much hedging. And also, those big brutes, it is hard to grow. Look how hard Anglo Gold, Gold Fields, and Harmony have battled to grow their ounces produced. So these behemoths that are 3 times larger, like Barrick, or Newmont's 3 times larger, Barrick's double, it's hard to grow. So your earnings go up automatically with the gold price, but once those earnings are reflecting the current gold price, now investors say, is gold going to go up more? Then the earnings will go up more. I'll tell you right now, if this gold price just stays here, earnings are going to come through like no analyst has calculated. But most analysts are too afraid to put in $4,000. I'm too afraid to put in $4,000. But these gold shares of ours, everybody's, they will keep rising if this gold price just stays here at $4,000. They initially jump, and then they discount, oh, this price is going to come back. And then they slow down, and we've seen gold has just relentlessly kept going up. Now they've had to play a bit of catch-up just the last couple of weeks again, because it looks like gold's here to stay. And if Goldman Sachs, well, they're saying what I was told 30, 40 years ago when I joined Alan Gray in 89. I remember the first analyst presentation I went to, Davis Borkum Hare. Dave Giese says, we've calculated if each Chinese citizen buys 1 gram of gold, it will overwhelm demand and the gold price will double. Well, that's kind of what Goldman Sachs is saying now. They say, if you add up all the gold in ETFs right now, that is only 1% of U.S. treasuries that investors hold. So if U.S. investors that hold these treasuries and foreigners hold them, if 1% of that gets converted into gold, that is more than every gold ETF on the planet. So Goldman Sachs says, do the numbers. Gold could easily get to 5. Yes, it could. If that large number, just 1% of that number switched. But so South African shares have not lagged the gold price any more than any other shares. They've done as well as any others, from what I can see, Alec.
And that gold project that you referenced?
Yeah, I kind of can't believe the numbers. It's New Caledonia and Zimbabwe. And they say, we are going ahead with a $500 million project. Now, I don't think the industry in Zimbabwe has spent $500 million on gold mines in the last 5 years. Now, New Caledonia has been there decades. If anybody knows how to mine in Zimbabwe and get through the labyrinth of government, workers, unions, society, they do. But they only produce 75, 80,000 ounces a year. They've announced for $500 million, they're going to have this project up and running in 2028, and it's going to produce 200,000 ounces. It's going to produce triple what they currently are. I've got to interrogate that. I know Zimbabwe has the potential to do it, and they have shallow gold, whereas most of ours is deep. So I'm guessing, I know no details of this mine. I just saw it this morning. I'm guessing the majority of it is open pit, you know, to bring those kind of production numbers ahead. But do you know what the payback is on that, Alec? 1.8 years to pay back $500 million. And you know what gold price they've assumed will make that money? $2,550. So that's what you call juicy numbers. You know, only 60% of today's gold price, a payback in 1.8 years. The problem is it's in Zimbabwe. How are they going to get the funding? Boy, but that's the discount African assets, gold assets trade at because of policy.
Imagine if you could buy a business, any business, and you got the money back in less than 2 years. You'd be knocking on those doors, doesn't matter where that business is based. Who's behind New Caledonian? Who are the people?
I honestly don't know. I'm very rusty on that. I think it's quite a diversified base. I know there's a few South African institutions that hold the shares. It's a listed share. So I think it's got a wide shareholder base. I haven't gone to their visit in years, but I used to go to their analyst visits. They'd come down here. What that country could do, they would race ahead of South Africa if they could change their government and or policies.
Perhaps that's
Africa
part of
has
it.
Juicy assets, without a doubt. This continent's got it.
Which brings me to the two stocks that are in our Biz News portfolios that I asked you just to give us an update on. Orion came up in the webinar yesterday. What's going on with Orion? And I promised that I would ask Peter.
I'm afraid I don't have any inside information that I can divulge. The publicly announced information said they have virtually signed off with Glencore. Glencore has virtually concluded a very successful due diligence all throughout the company. Not that any of us ever doubted they would find anything. There can't be a cleaner, more transparent company out there than Orion. So Glencore is going to provide $200 to $250 million financing. That's an odd number, Alec, because Orion needs $400 million to resuscitate the Prieska project in its original form, which was huge, 230,000 tons a month. Tony Lennox has been on record all year long saying, we will be producing copper at the end of 2026. So officially and unofficially, they claim, we will build a mine and a plant that will be producing at the end of 2026. It will be bigger than a pilot plant. Will it be scalable to add this great big one on, or will it be separate? It's sounding like it's going to be separate. But Tony staked his name and now the company's name. They will be producing copper. So it's probably going to be a 20%, 10 or 20% size plant. You know, it'll probably be 20, 30,000 tons a month, which is bigger than anything outside Palabora that would make a nice profit. but the company has a lot of shares out there. Is that going to enough to move the dial? I think it will if it shows they can bring it in under budget, financially and under budget time-wise. And we keep saying this is a great asset. The ore body, the head frame, access to the ore block. I don't take any of that back. We're not even talking the O'Keefe division. And copper is now touching $11,000 a ton, and zinc is $3,000 a ton. So if Glencore gives them a quarter of that much money, maybe they're going to start building the big plant simultaneously. I don't know. But there is no reason to be selling that share. And if you think this zinc and copper price are going to stay anywhere close to here, you actually want that share.
Aframet,
how often did we hear best company of the year, best performance the last 5 years? What's changed there, Alec? They branched out and they grew like they needed to. But even though they got into mining, it was bulk mining. And bulk mining lives and dies on transport. And this country is battling on transport. It's battling at its harbors. You know, Aframat could never get the harbor space, the cargo space. They could never get the train space to sell what they could produce. Their assets could have sold much more than they could have produced if they could got it to market. Now, we've seen the coal price. It had a few great, fantastic years, and it's sad that Aframat wasn't able to get that transport as much as they like, but they also had problems on their coal mine. And a lot of those were licensing problems, if you can believe it. They told me they thought all the licenses were in place except for a couple little ones. Here they are 3, 4, 5 years later. They still don't have all their necessary licenses. They're very, very close. So between the coal price falling, still not having the licenses necessary to change your mining method, to change the way the mine is structured, iron ore, manganese, coal, they all needed trains. They all needed harbors. And yeah, we saw it. We're selling 20 million less tons of iron ore than we were 20 years ago. And so poor newcomers, geez. And also, Aframat was hit very hard. A lot of their iron ore was going to ISCOR, and we know what's happening to ISCOR. It's shrinking rapidly. It's been deindustrializing for 20 years straight. So yeah, the products they were selling, they either couldn't get to market, or the market they had here locally, like furnaces for your anthracite, ferrochrome, ferromanganese. Those furnaces are closing, ISCOR is closing. So it was a lot of planets lining up the wrong way for poor Aframat.
But is there hope?
There is hope. Our infrastructure is improving. We want it to improve faster. I think the coal price has bottomed. Our harbors, we hope and pray that the capacity is increasing. So yeah, I think earnings would have bottomed out here. I can't see earnings going lower. And if any of their markets, iron ore, manganese, you know, if they can get the iron ore offshore, there's no demand here now with ISCOR. If they can get the manganese offshore, chrome, coal offshore, phosphate, you know, they put a fair amount of money and time into phosphate that Goldfields used to have. They've had problems getting that to market and marketing it for a fair price. Yeah, they had what, maybe 5 divisions here that all got hit almost simultaneously. But I wouldn't sell the share here. Yeah, I'm a real fan of theirs. I know a lot of the staff and the team. It's a great company with great people, and they'll get through this.
Peter Major is with Modern Corporate Solutions, and he's our man for Mining Web Weekly. I'm Alec Hogg from biznews.com.